Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the March 6th edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Of course, we have got another jam-filled episode here of the podcast. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend. UFC 235, we'll talk about our biggest takeaway from the event, the interaction between Mark Goddard and John Anik, Ben Askren surviving that storm against Robbie Lawler, and then, of course, the controversial ending. We'll talk about Bob Bennett, what he had to say following the event. Of course, we'll also talk about the title fights where we saw John Jones retain the UFC light heavyweight title and Kamaru Usman dominate Tyrone Woodley to win the welterweight title. Then going to have four interviews for you. You're going to hear from one of the winners from UFC 235, Cody Stamos. He's going to recap his win against Alejandro Perez. Then I'm going to be joined by one of the odds makers with MyBookie, Rafael Esparza. Of course, MyBookie has been a major supporter here of the MMA Report. We've told about you in the past, so we'll talk to Rafael Esparza about UFC on ESPN Plus 4 coming up on Saturday, the betting odds for that. Then you're going to hear two conversations with fighters who are both coming off recent victories. Anthony Avila, who is coming off a win at Combat Days 31 against Paulo Sobori. He'll talk about his win there. Also, talk to Nate Smith, who is coming off a submission victory at Elite Fight League 3 against Bill Camry. Had a chance to talk to all of those men, so look out for that later on in the podcast. And in the last part of the show, we are going to preview Saturday's UFC event, plus talk about Mirko Kokrop retiring, and Joe Rogan offered a little nugget on why Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone has not taken place. But Danny, let's get right into UFC 235, and in terms of the biggest takeaway, it's kind of, to me, it's really weird, because I think the biggest takeaway from the event is not, what happened in the main event with Anthony Smith showing, being honorable of not, basically taking the title when he had been dominated with that illegal strike. It's not Kamaru Usman with a dominating victory. To me, the biggest takeaway is Ben Askren weathering that storm that probably would have finished a lot of UFC welterweights. And then, of course, then we had the controversy. So to me, the biggest takeaway is Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler.
It was absolutely the most exciting thing that happened at UFC 235. I think more people are going to remember the Askren-Lawler fight than the Usman-Woodley contest. But I will say what Usman did to Woodley dramatically shifted the way I think about the welterweight class. But in terms of Saturday night, what's the thing you're talking about with your friends? It's absolutely the Ben Askren fight. I mean, that's probably the most – no, that's not even a that's a probably. That is definitely the most exciting Ben Askren fight I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that was everything I've been wanting to see out of Ben Askren in terms of him getting challenged between, nearly getting finished. I mean, that dude's face was messed up when the hands were being raised at the end to the choke and the controversy of the fact that Lawler wasn't out. And my original thought on what transpired here, Jason, was I have some sympathy for the referee here, because in the moment with the hand limp and asking for the submission, I did think Lawler's out. But it's clear a mistake was made in that Lawler was very much not out, and it's almost like you have to immediately go to a rematch.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the Lawler, and first off, Robbie, I mean, you talk about handling that with class, and you would not have blamed him if he would have just completely gone off, in that post-fight press conference. But it was just class that he handled himself with. To me, and I understand that the talk is about what happened at the end of the fight, but to me, the talk should be as much about the fact of, Ben Askren, I mean, I think a lot of welterweights would have been done, but somehow, he did survive, that flurry from Robbie Lawler. So to me, like, that's my biggest takeaway from the fight. I mean, the second biggest takeaway is kind of what happened at the end. I mean, there's one part of it where, you see Robbie's arm go limp. So if you're a Ben Askren supporter, you're sitting there saying, hey, look, his arm went limp. But There was another clip I saw on social media where it was basically right before Herb actually stopped the fight, or like he went in to kind of see if Robbie was out or not, and Robbie was moving his arm. And then one of the things that I did find interesting was a tweet that was sent out by Daniel Cormier about that ending, and he said, quote, "Love Robbie, but once that arm stops defending and goes limp, the ref has to step in. Congrats, Funky Ben Askren. Did it in such a Ben Askren way. Big brother choke." You know, look, if I'm Ben Askren, do I necessarily want to run it back? No. You know, because, you know, what is there ultimately the gain for you if you're Ben Askren running it back? To me, if Darren Till wins next weekend in London, and he's going to London next week, to me, that's the most logical fight if I'm in the Ben Askren camp. If I'm in the UFC camp, yeah, let's run it back.
It's interesting because it seems like the UFC hates Ben Askren, which is like the perfect storyline for Ben Askren, right? Like, it might be a little tongue-in-cheek the way it goes, but we know what happened here. I mean, this was absolutely a tough matchup for Ben Askren, the toughest he probably could have got realistically upon entering the UFC. So from their point of view, maybe they will run it back. You're right. If you're Ben Askren, all you got to do today is touch your forehead and realize why you don't want that rematch. It really hurts fighting Robbie Lawler. It really does. And that was a great takeaway you mentioned. You know, the adversity Ben Askren faced is unlike anything we've seen him face before. One of the most violent fighters in the UFC welterweight division, on top of you, raining down strikes, and he survived. That in and of itself is not necessarily something we could have checked off on the Ben Askren resume up until this point, in my opinion. So he proved a lot there. And what he also proved is when he faces that adversity, man, he digs deep. He gets the wrestling down, and he locks on a choke. And, yeah, I mean, it's a tough one for the referee because I do have some sympathy for referees. And trust me, we will bury referees when we talk about the co-main event. But when it comes to this fight, why I feel bad is, like, it is such a tight balance for these referees because you have to stop fights at the perfect moment. You don't want to stop it too soon. You want to make sure the guy's out and give him a fighting chance. But if you don't stop this fight on the correct time and you stop it late, then you begin putting the fighter's life in danger. So it's important to remember how quick these things happen and the balance referee has in terms of when they're deciding to end a fight.
It was not a great night for Herb Dean. I think, and you know, I remember right before the main event, I saw someone tweet this, go, you have to wonder with Herb being the referee for this one, is that going to be kind of still hitting his mind? I mean, I said something, you know, even though, I mean, if you look at the rules, what, you know, giving 2 points to John Jones for that legal strike was certainly in his, because he called it an intentional strike. So it, you know, in terms of the rules, it is a 2 point deduction. But, you know, they're watching it live, I was sitting there thinking, boy, I wonder if 2 points has maybe something to do with what happened, you know, earlier in the night. I mean, and Herb's, you know, Herb's had more of these bad nights more recently than we've ever seen with him. So, and I thought someone tweeted me this question. I want to say it was either on Fight Night or right after the fight's over, maybe the next day, said that, you know, do referees peak like fighters do? And I had never thought of it in that way. And I would say no, but at the end of the day, you know, we're all human. We all make mistakes, and you know, and Herb's going to learn from it. But I thought it was a really interesting question that was posed to me.
I know, and it's a tough question to answer. And I think the best people to answer that is someone like John McCarthy, who really understands what happened. Like, how do you get in your prime as a referee? How much is it being comfortable inside the cage and not letting nerves get to you? Or is that nerves, the adrenaline, is that a positive? I think you really got to ask a referee that question, Jason. But, I mean, it's also a situation in which the more times we see a referee, the more opportunities there are for them to screw up. So over time, it's more likely if we watch a referee, a famous referee 1,000 fights, it's more likely we'll think he's a worse referee than the referee we've seen ref 80 fights. Because in all likelihood, over the course of 1,000, I mean, Herb Dean is always in the spotlight. So every time he screws up, we're going to talk about it. But you are right in that it was kind of a theme tonight. It seems like we're talking about it more often. And it did feel like, man, I have not seen a 2-point deduction like that where it was like the first time offense.
I was thinking about that. I was like, right when it happened, I was like, man, have I ever seen a 2-point deduction? Like, I just, And I asked somebody at that, and they're like, you know, they couldn't really think of a 2-point deduction. I mean, it was, you know, at the end of the day, no matter where we're talking about, the fight game, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, wherever sport may be, as a referee, you never want to be the story. And unfortunately for Herb Dean, he became the story.
But I don't think he was the biggest story when it comes to referees this past weekend.
We'll get to that. I mean, obviously, so to me, Askren, Lawler, that whole situation to me is my biggest takeaway. I'm guessing that's probably your biggest takeaway as well. What would be your number two takeaway?
It's absolutely the Kamaru Usman fight over Tyron Woodley. Just because, you know, you go back, you can listen to the preview show. This is not something I expected. And this dramatically shifted the welterweight division. Not only the fact that Kamaru Usman beat Woodley, and Woodley's amassed just a great run at welterweight, Jason, but this was a dominant victory. This was like a changing of the guard atop of the weight class, and is not really something I expected. So that's kind of why the Usman-Woodley fight was not great. If you had friends over, it was something where maybe they lose interest at times. But the long-term meaning behind what we saw there to me was absolutely the number two story for me.
You know, one of the things that really jumped out to me, I mean, I thought Kamaru could win the fight, by no stretch did I think that he would go out there and dominate Tyron Woodley the way that Woodley was dominated. And look, Woodley did not make any excuses. He just sat there and said, hey, man, like I said, an off night. I'm not sitting here to make excuses. And I'm sure it's probably just like along the lines of Anthony Smith, where you're sitting back and just kind of going, man, why couldn't I throw the trigger the way I wanted to? And there was a great video that I retweeted it on Tuesday night of Anthony Smith being on SiriusXM with Dan Hardy, where they were kind of Dan Hardy was relating to what he went through fighting GSP, and it was just really fascinating to hear those two guys go back and forth. But the one thing that really stuck out to me, what Kamaru Usman said after this fight, he said, I'm paraphrasing what he said, not the exact quote, but paraphrasing, he said, I may not be the best wrestler. I may not be the best striker. I may not be the best jiu-jitsu guy. But when I mix it all together, I'm a problem. And I was like, man, he's right. I mean, he went out there, and I think it, and I had a buddy over, and you know, look, it was not the most exciting fight. I mean, even Ben Askren said, like, hey, if I went out there and had that kind of fight, I'd probably be booed out of the building. But it was just an unbelievable performance by Kamaru Usman. And then, of course, you know, Dana White says right after, hey, we're going to have him fight Colby Covington, which, I mean, look, makes all the sense in the world. I think there's a case for Woodley to get a meet rematch, but that case would be the fact of, you know, this guy's been a long time, you know, welterweight champion. I mean, what this was his fifth or sixth title defense. So I mean, from that case, but even Woodley said, he goes, I understand that, you know, when you go out there and get dominated like this, you can't exactly, you know, get in a meet rematch. But said, hey, I'll be waiting just in case, you know, Colby does screw up here. And then of course, Colby, Kamar, and Ali Abdelaziz, they get into it at the buffet line at the Palms. Boy, that video had a lot of takes from it.
Mm-hmm.
My first take was Colby Covington did not exactly look like, you know, for a guy that trash talks the way he does, didn't exactly want to engage with the altercation.
It seems like Colby Covington, and this isn't like an astute observation. I think most people watching what's happening with this guy see it. It seems like he's playing the role of Chael Sonnen, and it's weird. It's really weird. It seems like he's like, this is what I need to do to promote a fight, and it just seems so artificial and fake.
It's cringe.
It's cringe, but the thing is, it sucks because it still kind of works. People still know who he is. He did go to the White House. There's a lot of articles written about him, and it's the reason why he's fighting Usman and Woodley isn't. I mean, Tyron Woodley deserves a rematch in terms of like a sporting perspective. I think if you have a great champion who's dominant like that, he deserves a rematch. But when he got dominated that way, the fact that he wasn't a big name fighter in terms of like a pay-per-view attraction and a fan favorite that people demand to see, he's not getting the rematch. For instance, if Woodley had the name value of a Jon Jones or a Conor McGregor, the next fight would be Kamaru Usman versus Tyron Woodley. Like, obviously, And that's literally the difference. Like, if they had the same resume, the only difference for Woodley, not a draw, which is why – not a major draw, excuse me, which is why he's not getting the rematch, which is, like, a really weird thing. But it's, you know, it's the fight. It's the fight business. What was my second point? My second point was Woodley might get really screwed here because it's like a race – I know Ben Askren said he wants his blessing, but, like, it's like a race to who fights the title first between him and Askren now. I mean – let's say Woodley gets another fight. Askren's only one win away from a title shot. And an Askren title shot to me is a more interesting thing than a Woodley title shot.
But here's the question. What do you do with Woodley if he's not getting the next title shot?
You ask him, you want to – oh, what do you do? Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, man. I mean, I think the only other available guys, like – or not available, but like you look at Thompson, Dos Anjos, and Ponce Inibio amongst the fighters that he could theoretically match up with if he's taking some time.
Ponce Inibio, to me, would be the fight I think that would make the most sense.
Because, yeah, I mean, he might go out there and wrestle him, but a stand-up contest would be pretty dope. But I think if you're him, I think you try and get that fight booked on whatever card who's on. That's the co-main event.
Oh, no question. No question. That's exactly what you try to do. With that one, of course, after the fight, we get the interaction between Mark Goddard and John Anik, where John Anik was responding to a thread where he said it was about Goddard, wildly inconsistent, and yes, Usman was working his ass off. Goddard responds with, "The only thing wildly inconsistent is your and your co-com's recollection and observation of actual events. I'll save my side for later." John Anik responds to that tweet saying, quote, "I always try to be respectful. We are just calling it like we see it too. But there is an arrogance with which you deal with fighters, commentators, and many in this sport. And I find it off-putting. One's man take, and I'm quite sure you'll give yours for everyone to hear." That was John Anik, and I, John Anik is not the only one that feels that way about Mark Goddard. Let's just say that. I have talked to many people in this industry that don't care for Mark Goddard. And it's like I said a little earlier, as a referee, you never want to be the story, and Mark Goddard is making himself the story. There is a feeling that people believe Mark Goddard wants to be the next John McCarthy.
Spoiler alert, he's not going to. That's not the way. I mean, the way John McCarthy became John McCarthy. I mean, first off, this guy wrote the rules of the sport with Jeff Blatnick. So, I mean, you're never going to be the next John McCarthy unless you invent a time machine, push him out of the way, and you be one of the forefathers. But the thing with John McCarthy is, this dude, over time, commanded respect. Respect was a big thing. And, you know, doing what Mark Goddard did on Twitter, acting like a teenager who's, like, going through an identity crisis on Twitter, that's not how you command respect. It's not how you become John McCarthy. Also, John McCarthy is someone who I would say is very much self-aware and self-critical. And Mark Goddard made mistakes. He made way too many separations, and he was inconsistent with them. It's a great word of saying it. And instead of looking at the tape, admitting potentially he made a mistake or two, he digs his head in the sand and is arrogant about it. And the thing is, when your job is to protect the safety of fighters, Jason, there is no room for arrogance. Your arrogance, your attitude, your ego makes you a worse referee and puts the fighters in a cage at a greater risk. I wouldn't want a Mark Goddard to referee my fight because it appears with his own personal brand than actually becoming a better referee.
I mean, this is a thing. Like, if you're Kamar Usman, do you want Mark Goddard refereeing your next fight? No. I mean, why?
No.
I mean, if, you know, wherever Usman's next fight, and I think that there's two scenarios. I off the top of my head, with Kamaru Usman, either he's a co-main event of International Fight Week, what's that, July 6th, July 7th, whatever it is, or maybe he headlines maybe either the August or September pay-per-view against Colby Covington. So let's just say it's a co-main event of the July card in Vegas. If I'm Kamaru Usman, I'm Ali Abdelaziz, right before they are going to, you know, when they're going to do the discussion of who's going to be the officials, I sit there and make it known to the commission that we don't want Mark Goddard refereeing our fight, and here is why we don't want him refereeing our fight. We believe that he doesn't, he doesn't like the ground game, and he's not going to let me, do what I'm doing on the ground. So, I mean, I think that if I'm Usman, I don't want Goddard refereeing my fight.
It literally affects his fight. You know, his game plan is to take the fight to the ground or bully the opponent in the clinch. And there are reasonable times when you should separate. There were unreasonable separations in that fight several times. So if you're Usman, 100%, it is in your best competitive interest to make sure Mark Goddard doesn't referee that fight. Because a lot of times the way you win fights is not something he likes. And you need to find a referee who is more willing to let the ground game play out, even if it's not the most exciting thing in the world. And again, there are proper times to stand a fight up, to separate fighters. But you watch some of those times when things are being done and there was enough action, I believe, to keep the fight going at those positions. Undoubtedly, if you're the champion of the world, you don't want Mark Goddard to take that title away from you.
Yeah, it's just, and once at the end of the day, you just don't, as a referee, you don't want to be the narrative, and he's making himself the story. I think that's the part, and one of the things, and look, I give Bob Bennett a lot of credit for talking to the media, because look, we never see that happen after an event for the most part. I mean, never. One of the things I would love to see happen is that referees will start kind of defending their actions in a press conference scenario where they have to answer from the media. And it would have been interesting after UFC 235 if Herb Dean's up there and Mark Goddard, is defending what they did. I mean, of course, and Bob Bennett's going to defend his guys. Let's not kid ourselves. But, that press conference, Bob Bennett should not have talked. I think that he didn't come off the greatest. I think that it didn't do him a lot of good. Obviously he's defending what Herb did in the main event, or in the Askren Lawler fight, and then of course Herb's decision in the main event. And one thing I'll say is UFC 235 is a prime example of why commissions need to get on the same page. So, for example, the rule set that Nevada has is not the current unified rules of MMA, and it's not the old rules of MMA. It's Nevada's rules. They have their essentially their own set of rules. Now, the UFC is in Kansas this weekend. Kansas is under the new or the current unified rules of MMA, and I really hope that when we hit to late July and the Association of Boxing Commission Combative Sports has their meeting in Phoenix, which, by the way, Mike Mazzulli's term as president will come to an end. There'll be a new election. My general thought is I believe Andy Foster will be the next president of the ABC, is that all these commissions, whether you agree or disagree with these rule sets, will at least show up and have a conversation. And Bob Bennett, that goes to you. You need to show up as well and voice your displeasure for why Nevada has their own set of rules. Because at the end of the day, it hurts the fighters. And when you hear John Jones after the fight, I really question if John Jones understood what the rules were for that fight. And I think in talking to fighters, there's a lot of confusion on what are the rule sets on this Saturday as opposed to the following Saturday.
Yeah, that sucks. That's really confusing. I kind of get it when we're talking about going to Japan and the rules are a little different in another country. But in the United States, where the UFC primarily tours, the rules got to be the same. They really do. The location of the venue shouldn't alter what's going on with the moveset, especially when this is a sport where it's a matter of inches and it's a matter of small things that are the difference. Small things, whether it's, the opponent's down there, I can land an Easter egg, or he's got one hand down or no hand down. Like a single strike ends a fight and crowns a champion. And a single strike may be legal in one state and illegal the next. And it just depends which card you're booked on. And you are 100% right to point that out. I mean, it would be nuts if there were different rules in various college basketball games throughout a season, depending on what state you traveled in. There's a 4-point line here. You can foul on this one. There's no offensive fouls, etc. So it's ridiculous. And, I mean, let's not hide the fact that the kick to the head that John Jones threw was, I think, illegal in all 50 states. And that was something where it was like, dang, like that was crazy, man. You're a champion. You've been fighting forever. How do you do that? How do you almost do that? How do you almost throw that kick, man? Like you're out here having your only losses be DQ, huh? So, you know, John Jones makes mistakes. I mean, we've seen that both inside and outside the cage. But I totally agree with you. And you are much more plugged into this. And tell me if I'm wrong. I'm not super confident we're going to get there this year.
No.
What?
No.
Yeah.
You're 1,000% true. Yeah. We're not going to – on the regulatory side, check the egos at the door, folks. I mean, that's what's got to happen because this has got to be about the fighters. This isn't about whether you agree with what – the rules and regs committee, what they kind of, help implement, which by the way, John McCarthy is on that committee. Let's not forget that. The guy that helped build the rules of MMA is on this committee. And so it's just, I would hope that these commissioners would just check the egos at the door and just have a conversation and let's do what's best for fighters. Because I think you look at the John Jones situation, and I'm not trying to defend John Jones. This is what I truly feel happened. He was anticipating Anthony Smith coming up based on other things that happened, and Anthony Smith didn't come up.
I get that totally. And just in terms of the fight, man, this is not necessarily a fight, Jason, that I think is going to go in the highlight reel for John Jones. I felt like this was just, I'm the better fighter. I'm more dominant. I'm one of the best fighters of all time. I'm going to use my range. I'm going to get the win. But it's definitely one of the most forgettable fights, I think, in his championship run, in the long run. I mean, I think it's telling that we had a John Jones fight, Jason, with some controversy, and it took this long for us to get there, and I think it was warranted.
Hey, look, kudos to Anthony Smith for not taking the easy way out. Because he could,
oh, yeah.
Because, look, he could have taken the easy way out, become champion and made millions of dollars due to it. And he did it. And that's honorable for what, if you didn't have, whatever your thoughts of Anthony Smith were before this, kudos to Anthony Smith. I mean, I've never sat there and had a chance to talk to Anthony Smith. You'll hear my conversation with Nate Smith later where, we talked about Anthony Smith cause he's a training partner of Anthony. And he's like, hopefully, all this, lays to rest about Anthony's cardio. And I heard even Anthony mention this after, and I go, Nate, have I missed something here that people are questioning Anthony's cardio? Like, did you hear any of this? Like, I know there are things I miss, but like, I heard Anthony say it and Nate said to me, and I'm like, who are these people that are sitting there saying that Anthony's got no cardio?
Yeah, I mean, no one's saying that. I think people are saying, hey, this dude finishes people early. I mean, the vast majority of his wins are quick, but I mean, he's fought a long time. We've seen him go the distance, so I don't necessarily grasp that at all.
Yeah, but I mean, look, it's, I am sure I don't think there are fighters that would admit it. I'm sure there are fighters that would have taken the easy way out there
to become champion. I think I would have. I think totally. I know I don't have a chance of beating John Jones ever. And this guy hits me with an illegal knee. If this guy pokes me in the eye, I'm staying down. Like, I am staying down. I'm getting the championship and I'm running away. All right. Like, don't get me wrong. The worst part about it is that means I have to fight him again. So he's going to hurt me again. But you get that championship paycheck, Jason, you should take it. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Financially, that was a big mistake. I mean, it's not like he's going to go out there and knock him out in the fifth round. I think in the heat of the moment, the culture of sports are pretty simple. You get knocked down, you get back up. So it's just like you're so emotionally invested, you may not be thinking about the long-term implications. But, watching the fight with a bunch of buffalo wing sauce all over my fingers and my other phone on Twitter scrolling through it, I'm like, I would have stayed down and won the championship. But I tell you this much. Would have been a no contest, Jason. contest. They would not have given the title to Smith. I don't know how, but you know, things work out for John Jones. I'll tell you that much.
It's funny you mentioned about eating during the fights. I had my buddy over, and the hit of my house was I had gone to Sam's Club the other day and got the Reese's eggs, which are just straight up delicious. And he saw that, what me and my wife call the evil corner of our bar. And that was the hit of the watch party at my house, was the Reese's eggs.
So it's like egg yolk with chocolate Reese's on the outside?
It's just a big Reese's cup type deal. Look, if you've not had one, Daniel, and if you are a Reese's peanut butter cup fan, just have one. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. That also sounds like if you get enough of them, and you sit down, you watch a 9-hour UFC broadcast, you're gonna feel like so bad.
Oh, my buddy Ronnie, he loves peanut butter. He loves. Peanut butter.
Man, because that's just boom boom. Eat the hell out of those. Yeah, those sound.
Yeah. It was fun watching the fights. There's three other kind of major takeaways I have of UFC 235. Where does Cody Garbrandt go from here? Right when he went into brawl mode, in my mind I was like, all right, he's about to get knocked out. Saw that one coming. The hype is real about Johnny Walker. And number three, Mickey Gall was way too honest on Instagram.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing about UFC 235 is there was a whole lot that happened here. Like Cody Garbrandt versus Pedro Munhoz and Johnny Walker versus Serkanov. And Mickey Gall situation is enough to carry like an entire post-fight show, I think, in terms of topics to talk about. That's how much happened here. I mean, we saw a guy in Cody Garbrandt who was atop the bantamweight weight class, basically, and he's got a long road back to recovery. For Pedro Munhoz and Cody Garbrandt, that was a phenomenal fight. But the way those two fought, I mean, they fought like – they were just throwing haymakers at each other. It was insane. And it's not a great game plan because you're going to get caught, and Garbrandt did. And that was a phenomenal fight, a great win for Munhoz. And again, for Cody Garbrandt, man, he really finds himself in a position that I didn't think we were going to see him in 2019, maybe in 2023. But in 2019, he's really got some work to do to get back to where he once was. Johnny Walker, Jason, he needs to be on the same card every time John Jones fights for the title. Because, oh my God, the UFC have a star in the making here. This guy went out, 36-second knockout over Misha Serkinov. Every time you put something in front of him, he passes with flying colors. He injures himself with celebrations. Man, a great flying knockout. And then Mickey Gall. Yeah, man. For him, it kind of sucks too, honest, on social media about the whole issues with weight cut and stuff. And now a doctor has to approve him getting trained.
Dude, that I have never seen that on a medical suspension list. When I got the email from Colleen with the Nevada Commission, with basically what it is, it's the official result sheet that they send to the media, and also notes what the medical suspensions are. I have never seen that. I'm sure it's happened before, but personally, I've never seen that.
Me neither. It's such a random thing. I kind of. Like, I think it's cool. The only thing that sucks is, like, it seems like this was a reaction to something he posted on social media.
Oh, no. Well, A, the question has got to be is, did he note that to the commission, you know, at some point, or note that to the UFC? I mean, once again, it's another prime example of don't be honest. I mean, because it can really hurt you. I mean, look, you know, kudos to Diego Sanchez for going out there and doing what he did in the fight. Gets his first stoppage victory since 2008. It's 2019.
Does Diego Sanchez, by the way, awesome to see Diego Sanchez perform like that. Does Diego Sanchez ever get a stoppage win in the UFC again? Does it ever happen, you think?
Ooh, I don't know. By the way, should we do Mickey Gall CM Punk 2 now?
Oh, my God. Get out of here. I do not want to see CM Punk.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I just remember when Mickey Gall was having that rise, I had so many people tell me, like, hey, this kid's legit. But, man, you look at this loss, you look at the Randy Brown loss, it's bad losses. I mean, I think in terms of other results that You know, we mentioned about where does Cody Garbrandt go from here. I think Tiesha Torres is another one of, I think there's a legitimate question of whether her next fight's in the UFC or not. Yes, her two previous losses are against the top of the comp, you know, of the division. But she's now lost, you know, three in a row. 12 of her 13 fights have gone the distance. You know, credit to Wally Zhang getting the win. I mean, obviously, you know, she's now a fire that the UFC can build on in the China market. But, you know, Tiesha Torres doesn't exactly have that fighting style the UFC, you know, wants to be in business with. Kudos to Pedro Munhoz, what he did. Zabit Magomedsharipov, look, the guy is extremely talented. But, I mean, even Dominic Cruz kind of noting on the broadcast what happens when this guy's going to get, you know, put on his butt. And that's something there. Cody Stamen, of course, you'll hear from him momentarily. Evan Shabazian, nice knockout win against Charles Byrd. Hannah Cyphers with a win over Paul Viana, even though a lot of people thought that Viana should have got the win. But Cyphers gets a split decision win. And Macy Chase on getting that knockout against Gina Mazzani. You know, definitely some, you know, overall, man, just a great night of fights.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, Weili Zhang is absolutely a fighter. With the skill set to eventually challenge for the women's strawweight championship. I mean, Tiesha Torres was a tough challenge. The fight itself was all right. But a lot of back and forth, a lot of skill there, and a solid stand-up, I think, from Zhang, and a really well-rounded fighter who just, you know, is probably going to challenge for a strawweight title eventually, and someone they can build around in the Asian market. I mean, Zabit Magomedsharipov, huge win over Jeremy Stephens. We all know how talented Jeremy Stephens is, and Magomedsharipov, again, you look at him, and it's really fun to watch him fight on the feet. Really creative striker. And you bring up a good point in that the wrestling will probably be an issue for him moving forward, but we're not there yet. The most impressive fight in the prelims to me was Edmund Shabazian's victory, and then, of course, you got Cody Stamen. He had the win, and looking forward to hear what he has to say on the pod.
Of course, that was last Saturday. Of course, coming up this Saturday, we've got UFC on ESPN Plus 4. By the way, prelims start 5 p.m. Eastern time. Main card at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we'll talk about those fights here in a little bit. But you just heard Daniel mention about the interview I had with Cody Stamen. You're going to hear that next. And then after Cody, you'll hear my conversation with Rafael Esparza, of course, odd maker with my bookie. We'll talk about the betting odds for this weekend's UFC. Then you'll hear my conversation with Anthony Avila and Nate Smith. Joining me now here on the AmeriPort, a man scored a victory this past weekend. UFC 235. He's now ranked in the top 10 in the UFC bantamweight division, Cody Stamen. Cody, congratulations on the victory. Solid performance you had against Alejandro Perez. I got to ask about the stare down you had with him during media day when he's doing whatever with his hands. Like, were you just like sitting there going, what the hell is this dude doing?
Dude, honestly, I couldn't concentrate on what was going on. I couldn't look at the, you know what I mean? Not that I'm just standing there, you know, smiling, but the fact that he's like doing all this weird shit with his hands, I can't help but like want to look over at him. And I'm also, you know, I'm trying not to, you know, make it as awkward as he's making it, but I'm realizing that like, I got to see what he's doing. And I'm like trying to like glance over like what the hell is going on. But it was just a weird situation. Obviously, you know, Barstool Sports, that got like a million hits, which was really cool. So that actually got me a little bit of publicity. So I guess I got to thank Perez for being a goofy dude up there.
And of course, you ultimately go out there and get the win. I remember as the fight ended, the unofficial stats had you up, I would say, you know, 61-49. And once the official stats kind of came in, it was a lot closer. And I was kind of surprised. I thought it was a very clear win for you. But there was a lot of people on MMA Twitter that were like, kind of like thought that the fight was a lot closer than I kind of perceived it to be. What was your thoughts, you know, as you're sitting there waiting for the scores to be read?
I mean, I felt like I had done everything. You know, a lot of my game plan was to kind of counter Perez, because I noticed that, you know, when like in leading up to that fight, you know, obviously I only had 4 weeks to prepare, but in preparation, kind of everything I was doing was based off of like his offense. So a lot of times I was faking and feigning and trying to draw something out of him, trying to get him to commit to something, commit to a hard leg kick or commit to a hard jab and do the things that I've seen him do in all of his previous fights, he has these like blatantly obvious tendencies. And he does these things extremely well, but I was prepared for them. And then he wasn't engaging with me. Here I am just walking him down, waiting and waiting and waiting. And so now I got to start, you know, kind of getting my own offense off and kind of changing, you know, the original game plan a little bit. But obviously I'm going forward. I'm throwing more combinations. I'm initiating the takedowns. I watched the fight. I've probably watched it 10 times now. I've been watching it all morning, and no planet could I say that I think he even won a round. I mean, the best thing he did was that takedown, and that was it. You know, that was an awesome takedown, even though it happened to me. It was a great lift and a great takedown. I mean, that, like, I pride myself on not being the easiest guy to take down. I don't think I got taken down one time leading up to this fight, you know, in camp. My takedown defense was just on point. I was like, there's no way. Like, if he shoots on me, I don't even care. Like, he can't take me down. And then he did, and did take me down. And I was more or less, when I hit my back, was surprised. I was like, I just got lifted and flipped upside down by this dude. I can't believe that. Like, he's really, really strong dude. But, I mean, that was really the only good offense that he mounted that whole time. And then, you know, he didn't do anything with it. You know what I mean? I hit, I rolled, I got in guard, I found where he was, and he was trying to land kicks on the ground, but nothing was really that, like there was no shot that he threw that hurt me. There was really nothing. He didn't do anything the whole fight. And I don't know if it, like, the fakes and the threats of the takedowns were the reason he never pulled the trigger. But it was really hard to look good against a guy that literally is backing himself to the cage and is not engaging with you, you know? So as much as I was disappointed with myself, knowing that I didn't give the fans what they wanted to see, you know, Perez had a part in this dance too, and he didn't show up to dance with me. You know what I mean? He literally backed himself up the whole time and never really committed to anything. And it's really hard, you know, as an athlete, as a fighter, to, you know, look good against a guy who's not engaging with you at all.
And you mentioned about how many times you've now watched this fight. What are you the happiest with, and what is there anything you're disappointed with what you were doing in there?
So I'm extremely happy with the fact that I was, from the very, very first bell to the very end of the fight, I was consistent in my execution of my game plan. I stuck to my guns. I fought exactly the way I knew I had to fight. My timing was great on all my shots. The things I'm most disappointed there were a lot of opportunities for me to land a right hand. I didn't throw my right hand enough, and I can't really tell you why. There's so many opportunities. With the takedowns, you know, I didn't chain wrestle well. I didn't wrestle very well. I think I was expecting to just hit him with a hard double leg. I've hit everybody else with, and he was just going to fall, you know, and his takedown defense was, you know, vastly underestimated by me. So there's things to learn. There's things to do. But I just beat a guy who's 7-1 in the UFC and has been beating a lot of really, really tough guys, hasn't lost in 4 years, and I did it on 3 weeks' notice. So, you know, I'm taking the good with the bad here. You know, I'm completely injury-free. I could fight, you know, next month if they wanted me to. So, yeah, it's just on to the next one. You know, if that doesn't kind of tell people the level of that I'm bringing to the octagon, I don't know what would.
You know, you mentioned about, hey, you know, injury-free, ready to go. But I got to imagine, you know, you want somebody with a single-digit next to your name, correct?
Yeah, it's hard to say that. It's hard to say that because there are so many tough guys at bantamweight. You know, who's the toughest guy? Is the toughest guy a guy with a single digit next to his name, or is it the guy that should be you know, in that spot? You know, so for me, it's I just want fights that are gonna continue to move me forward, to kind of build my name. Honestly, I've only been thinking about this today, this morning, and I kind of looked at the top 15, and I would prefer to fight someone in the top 15. And I'm looking at some of the guys, and like I was looking at, I was like, oh, you know, what about, you know, Dodson, he just fought. I was looking at all these guys, and I was like, you know what? There's kind of, I'm not really seeing anyone that like jumps out and is like, that's the guy I need to fight 100%. I think there's a couple fights over the next couple months that need to happen, kind of play out for me to kind of decide, you know, where the best avenue is for me to go. You know, there's guys in the top 15 right now that I feel like, you know, Thomas Almeida, Ricky Simon, these are guys I feel like are similar to Alejandro Perez. And at 8 weeks camp, I could really, really, really do some serious damage to those guys. You know, and maybe I want that opportunity next. But, you know, 2019 for me, it's just been, it's 100%, it's a building year. It's a building year, you know. I had a setback in 2018, and I need to rebuild to where I was. And that means, you know, look, at every single time you lose in this sport, you have to win 3 to 5 fights afterwards. So my main focus moving forward is just being consistent all year, you know, whether that's 3 or 5 fights, I don't care. I'm going to fight a lot this year, and winning, just beating tough guys, you know, whether it's the number 5 guy, number 15 guy, you know, some undefeated prospect from who knows where, like, it doesn't matter. Like, any of those guys, you know, all those guys are on my radar, and I'll fight and beat any of them.
You know, one of the names I had thought of, it was Cody Garbrandt. The fact of, you know, he's coming off that loss against Pedro Munhoz. I'm sure you were backstage watching that fight. And Chael Sonnen, I thought, had some great analysis on that. He was surprised how Cody fought that fight. That he thought maybe Cody would kind of use his grappling a little more to get to win against Munhoz. I mean, I know you're watching every 135 pound fight, but that surprised you how that fight went?
Yeah, it did. It surprised me that Cody got into that that emotional that early in the fight. I was surprised that he got up. He got up after, you know, spending a little time on his back, and he was really like physically, you could see that he was pissed. He was ready to, you know, get in there and get in a slugging match. And I feel like that's kind of exactly what Pedro Munhoz wanted. Pedro Munhoz is known for those kind of fights. Obviously, so is Cody Garbrandt. I really thought Cody was going to have the edge, but the way Cody was like loading up and throwing those shots, you know, that's not the way I've seen him throw those in the past. I've seen him just rip off 3 really, really hard shots, but this time it was like one hard shot. And that's pretty easy to counter if you're a guy like Pedro Munhoz. I was actually really surprised with the way he fought, but, you know, a lot of people have said that, you know, maybe Garbrandt would be next for me. I could see Garbrandt in 2 fights. I think that he's probably most likely going to need to take some time. You know, and if his name comes up, sooner than later, I like the guy a lot. I think he probably needs at least 6 months before he can fight again. Considering, you know, that's a pretty significant head injury. But you know, who knows? Like I said, there's not a guy on the UFC roster that's out of question for me right now. I mean, there's talent up and down. There's talent everywhere. Like I said, I just want to be consistent. I want to keep winning fights. And you know, if it's Garbrandt or anybody, you know, I'll be ready to go. I'll be more prepared next time. I have a lot to, you know, build off of right now. You know, I can get back in the gym the end of this week. And, you know, kind of start moving forward again.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing when that next fight could take place. Cody, man, as always, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media. And if there's any, you know, sponsors you want to let people know about.
Yeah, everything is just Cody Stamann. I got to thank the UFC. I got to thank ESPN for having me, man. That was a dream come true to fight on ESPN this weekend. And I can't wait to do it again.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is Rafael Esparza. Of course, is from MyBookie. Of course, you go to mybookie.ag to place your bets on the UFC, as they, of course, have got lines up for this weekend's UFC on ESPN Plus 4 card, which, of course, comes from Wichita. Also got some Conor McGregor prop bets out there. Rafael, man, I appreciate the time, man. How's things been?
Good. A little crazy weekend with UFC 235. I mean, college basketball full in effect. But I think it was this weekend we had some good fights, and people missed a good boxing fight on Showtime because of the UFC stack 235. But at the same time, it was stacked. I think the last two fights were kind of snooze fest.
Yeah, they were not the most exciting fights. I don't think any of us saw Usman winning in that dominating fashion. I think we all I saw, what was it, Jones to win by decision was like, wasn't it like 7-1 odds or something like that?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was huge because people thought, I mean, over under was 1.5, and we were begging for under money just because everyone thought it was going to be a quick fight. And then we started getting some over money during the Tyrone Woodley fight just because that was a snooze fest, and maybe they thought it would be back-to-back snooze fest, and whoever did started that, hats off to you because both fights went over the round prop. And crazy because I was more begging just to get the fight over because I was tired, never alone, just I wanted to see a good fight.
No, I totally get that. Of course, you can follow my bookie on Twitter. The MMA is at MyBookieMMA. Always putting out some great gifts out there for people. And of course, if anyone ever has a question for you, but of course, you are a lines maker, and you know, and sometimes when I talk to fighters, that they'll say, "Man, what are these guys making odds on fights? What the hell are they thinking?" So, kind of talk to me a little bit about how the odds get made for MMA fighting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably like the million-dollar question when I used to work in Vegas behind the counters on how we did numbers and how you project that. And now it's projecting to how I do my numbers for UFC entertainment stuff and all that. It's all about money coming in. Yes, we look at records, and yes, we look at who's the matchups and stuff like that. But we need to make numbers on what the public is going to come in on right away. It doesn't matter who's fighting who. Who's the public going to fight? A perfect example, Dos Santos. We actually made him a little bit higher than normal against Derek Lewis because I can guarantee you Derek Lewis money is going to come in late Saturday before they get in the ring, just because people want to see what he says after this fight. If he wins, if he's going to take off his clothes some more, what's he going to say during the press conference? So we actually made it a little bit higher so we wouldn't get burned on the Derek Lewis money that will probably come in all throughout the weekend. So that's how we make our numbers. Yes, we look at the records. Yes, we look at the matchups. But at the same time, we need to take a step back and see, okay, what's the public going to bet on right away so we don't get buried in the hole before these two guys even get into the octagon? So that's a lot to do with it, trying to figure out what the public is going to do right away.
And, of course, if you want to place a bet on Saturday's fights, just go over to mybookie.ag. Of course, you mentioned about Derek Lewis and Junior Dos Santos. As we're talking here on Tuesday morning, seeing right here on my bookie, JDS minus 235, Derek Lewis plus 183. Where did y'all guys open up that fight at?
I think 230 we opened up Dos Santos. He moved about maybe 5 points, small. Yes, it took a little action, and it moved it up. But like I said, I can guarantee you a ticket count. Last time I checked, I didn't check it this morning. It was mostly tickets were written on Derek Lewis. But, of course, that was small money, the big money. I don't want to say the wise guy money because we haven't really seen that much wise guy money come in on Dos Santos. But a little bit higher value money coming in on Dos Santos. But the public money, I can guarantee you, again, will be all on Derek Lewis just because of who he is. And that heavy punch that he can get in. I mean, he can be getting his booty whipped all through three rounds, and he just throws a haymaker, and anybody would be sleeping.
Yeah, I think when you look up and down this fight card on Saturday, I think it's a card that has potential to have a lot of finishes, just when you kind of look at, I look at the Zaliski-Dos Santos-Millender fight, Price, Means, Bagoy and Rothwell. I mean, Moraes and Martin. To me, I think this card, are you seeing that kind of early on that a lot of people maybe are going with under bets, because they kind of feel these fights are going to end quick?
They will. I think it was funny when I was looking at this because I look at the cards right when they're announced and I try to do my numbers a couple weeks before that. But let's face it, I mean, I hate to keep a beating a dead horse, but UFC 235, that was a really stacked card if you kind of looked all the way down. And I like how they presented that to being the first kind of ESPN UFC pay-per-view. So I kind of slept on this card of ESPN plus four. And then when I went back to look at it, I'm like, holy cow, you said that the Martin Morales, that fight can go early. I think the price means there's no way I see that fight going a distance. So, yeah, I would not be shocked if this is going to be a very, very fast card in Wichita, Kansas, just because I think we're going to see some knockouts. And then, of course, the main event, the two big guys in the ring. I would be totally blown away if Luis Santos makes it to the late rounds.
Yeah, it would be kind of surprising to me as well. I mean, because one of the things when I always look at the betting odds, because it kind of helps me when I'm doing some of my prep for the DFS show that I do. I mean, one of the things that I think really jumps out to you, there's not a really huge favorite on this card. I mean, every, you know, 2-1 and under. I mean, and I think we see a lot of that in the UFC. But, you know, for you, is this kind of, are you surprised that we don't, you know, maybe there's not a fight on here that you think you'd have a 3 or 4-1 favorite?
No, I mean, once I went back, like I said, and looked at the card, then I'm like, wow, that's a lot of close cards. Like you said, there's no $3 favorites, $4 favorites. There's a 2 -210s out there. Of course, Dos Santos -235, Means -210. But I think we're going to get, no pun intended, price on price. I think we're going to get some money coming in there. I would not be shocked if that thing floats around maybe -190 or even lower when those two to get in there. So I think we'll see maybe just two high $2 favorites, and anything else is going to be close. I think the Anthony Rocco Martin, I think that one moves to $2. I think the money started to come in on him yesterday. I wouldn't be shocked if once weigh-in goes in, more money comes in. They would not be shocked if the Marine Renault goes higher as an underdog. I think that fight will probably maybe be close to $2. Maybe Grant Dawson, I think that one drops a little. But, yeah, I don't see anything coming close to a $3 favorite in this one, which is good because I think we can see some upsets and maybe some jaws drop, because who doesn't love a dog on big UFC nights?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the Mary Renault fight, just give me the over. I'll blindly take the over.
Exactly. I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to tip my card because I didn't want people to start betting the over, because I can guarantee you I'm going to be begging and begging and begging for under money coming in. But, yeah, if there's any fight that goes over the round prop, that one, you can put up over under 9.5 rounds, and it would still probably go over.
Yeah, it's Jedi Goodman on Twitter does a really good job of kind of – he jokes about it every fight card of, you know, and I think it's like 67% of female fights go over.
Yes, it's around there. Exactly. I think so far in 2019, I think we've seen a little bit more knockouts on the women. I was trying to do a trend on that the other day, and I didn't do it for the last two fights. I need to keep up on some of that action. But I think 2019, we've seen some underbets come in that were shocks.
Yeah, of course, I always love on social media, and I know it kind of started on the Pat McAfee podcast of bankrupt my bookie, and I know you guys have kind of run with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun trend, but like I said, in MMA, especially when I'm looking at that, anytime I see an underdog win, I know it's probably two underdog wins, it's going to be a successful, because let's face it, a lot of people are parlaying the heavy favorites. We're going to see huge parlay with the $2 favorites. Maybe not that much of the Dos Santos, just because of who he's fighting. Derek Lewis, like I said, he could be losing every round and then throws up a haymaker in the fifth and last round to knock him out or to win that one. But I can guarantee we'll see Means parlays with Dorish. Every $2, Hughes would be a heavy, heavy favorite. Alex Marone would probably be a big favorite. So anytime any one of those goes down, it's probably going to have a nice, successful day. And when I used to work in Vegas over at MGM and all that, anytime underdog won in UFC or any MMA event, you always saw that parlay tickets just flying through the air as you had scrap paper on the floor if you needed some.
Yeah, I think the one line that I'm going to be kind of interested to see how it goes throughout this week is actually the heavyweight fight between Ben Rothwell and Blagoy Ivanov, because, you know, Ben's, it's his first fight back from suspension. And, you know, right now, just kind of looking at +110, I mean, that's nice little value. I have a feeling that +110 number by the time we get the fight night's not going to be there.
No, I circled that one, and I'm going to tell people, if you said he's coming back from suspension, you know he's going to be mad. You know he's got a lot of anger tendencies flowing in his system coming back from suspension. There's no way you're going to see plus money on that. And would not be shocked if he closes as a very, very small favorite just because of the +110 right now. We saw it in the Tisha Torres fight. She was a small favorite right in the beginning, and she was an underdog. Flip-flop when both girls got in the ring. Would not be shocked if the Ben Blagoy fight does the same thing. I think Rothwell might, and maybe even close, maybe Mike maybe minus 115, minus 120. Would not be shocked if he's a very, very small favorite when he gets in the octagon.
Of course, you also got prop bets up there, some prop bets on Conor McGregor. One has to do with Conor versus Cerrone, Conor minus 200, Donald Cerrone plus 160 also. Another prop bet about Khabib to have a rematch with Conor in boxing by August of 2019. Of course, Joe Rogan coming out with why this Cerrone-McGregor fight apparently is not happening, which is just... So UFC, but what are some of the other prop bets that the MMA fans can be looking out for this weekend in terms of the UFC?
I think after John Jones won his easily fight, I think the Brock Lesnar John Jones rumor will probably start flowing. Maybe Lesnar and DC will probably start flowing again, because I think we all kind of agree that Brock, well, his WrestleMania match coming up in WWE is his last. His last WWE event, because I think his suspension comes off of UFC, so he can finally start fighting there. So would not be shocked if you hear those two matches with either Brock Lesnar. I would not be shocked if Brock fights DC. I think that would be a bigger draw just because there are two body types different. I know everyone thinks John Jones would beat Brock Lesnar, but that's a big weight difference. And that one kind of blows my mind. I mean, we're probably going to have more Conor McGregor, Cerrone or Khabib, and maybe other rumors coming up, because I just don't think that fight's going to happen. And you might probably throw in some boxing rumors in there, because I know Conor, I've heard it from his camp telling me straight to my face before he hangs up his gloves and makes more kids and sits back and makes movies or whatever, he wants to fight Paul Malignaggi. No matter what, these two guys hate each other. I was outside T-Mobile when these two went almost blow to blow in street clothes. I mean, these two do not like each other now, so I would not be shocked if you start hearing more. If he can't get a fight in UFC or another boxing, whatever, I would not be shocked if you hear that rumor between Collar and Paul Malignaggi, just because those two do not like each other since all the stuff that Paul Malignaggi said back in the day. So you're going to see a lot more rumors out there, just because who knows who Conor's fighting. I mean, right now, UFC pretty much only has one face. That main face, and think they did backflips when Bones Jones won on Saturday, because at least they can promote that face. But they would love to have Conor back in the octagon and have a win in the octagon, so they can put two faces in the company.
Of course, my listeners can go to my bookie, play UFC, but also play, pretty much if you want to place a bet on a sporting event, you can definitely do that at my bookie. Rafael, man, I appreciate time. Let all my listeners know, how they can open up an account at my bookie and, whatever you want to promote, what's going on with you guys.
Yeah, you can jump over to mybookie.ag, open up an account. We have a 50% sign up bonus right now. That means if you put in a deposit of, let's say, $500, we're going to put up to $250 into your account. Use a promo code MMATW, 50% sign up bonus. Like I said, UFC cards up, ready to go. You have some Bellator action coming up. We'll put some odds on that. It's just a great time. And it's March Madness. I know maybe you want to watch two guys beat each other in the octagon in a ring, but you can also watch some college basketball at the same time when you're watching two guys in the octagon. So don't forget about March Madness right here, right around the corner.
You join me now here on the MMA Report is a man who scored a victory at Combat Days 31. Anthony, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, majority decision there. Watching the fight, I thought clearly you'd won the first two rounds, and Pablo definitely took the third round. I kind of the way I saw the fight, it was like early on, it was a battle of leg kicks.
Right.
Goes to the ground a little bit, but then really as the fight went on, it was like, I mean, your left was just constantly landing, and then he was throwing a lot of head kicks. What's kind of your assessment of the fight?
Man, it was just a war. I knew they were going to cut. Like, I fought one of his teammates, the Jose Luis Verdugo, and their game plan was to take out my leg. So I kind of figured he was going to – sorry, one second. I apologize if that cut us off. Someone that
no, called. So yeah.
I knew the game plan was – I figured the game plan was going to be the same. It was to take my legs out, and I worked with CSA quite a bit this camp, and my game plan was to check kicks. And my game plan was to check kicks and counter and calf kick his ass back, because they got me last time. But it was a tough battle, man. He came out. He was tougher. He was a lot tougher than I thought. I knew he was going to be tough, but I didn't think he was going to be that damn tough. But a fierce little rooster, man. He got a good nickname. Those roosters are killers, and he's a phenomenal athlete.
End of the first round, you just run out of time. I mean, maybe if you have 10, 15 seconds more, maybe you get that stoppage. So when you go to the corner, is that mindset of like, let's get on him immediately because he may not be fully recovered?
I don't remember what the hell his mindset was. I remember I sat down and Andre was like, stand up, stand up. Andre Fili was like, stand up, stand up. My mindset was like, motherfucker, I want to sit down. But as far as the fight, I was just going through the motions, man. I was on autopilot. Just, I'm here to fight, man, and I just trusted my training. So that's what it was after that. After I watched the fight, I was like, damn, I probably should have put a little bit more on it at the beginning of the second round.
You mentioned about Andre. They showed the footage between the second and third round. Andre was definitely getting vocal about go out there and win this fight. Was it something that do you think Andre kind of felt like, hey, I need to kind of get in him here to make sure he closes this deal out?
Well, I mean, I use my hands a lot in sparring, right? And I'm more of a boxer, I guess, if you will. I mean, I'm not more of a boxer. I'm an MMA fighter, but I like to box a lot. So he wanted me to throw my hands a lot more. I would throw like one shot here and there. Like in the second round, I think it was maybe 5-6 naked left hands, nothing behind it. And he's like, motherfucker, excuse my language, sorry. He's like, man, I need you to throw more punches. Like, use your hands. I want you to use your hands. So he wanted me to use my hands more because he thought I could put them away. And obviously, as a fighter, anybody that sees this, you see what you should throw. Sometimes it comes out and sometimes it doesn't, and it wouldn't come out. So
the left hook, it was there all fight round, first round to the third round. Is that something you just kind of felt leading up to that fight? Like, man, I know this is going to be there.
No, I guess not, but I knew he was long and he backs up straight. So I was throwing a long left hook. I know if I threw a short left hook, it would have missed him. So I just threw a long left hook. And then after it kept landing a couple times, he's a smart guy. I thought he was going to notice the left hand was coming and think I was setting up the right hand. So I just kept throwing it, kept landing. So I just keep throwing it. I'm not going to switch it up. You know, if it's not broke, you don't got to fix it. So kept landing for me.
So as the scores are being read, the first score was reading of 28-28, which would have given Pablo a 10-8 round in the third. Do you remember what your thought was when you hear the first scorecard is 28-28?
No, I thought it was fair. I don't know if that was necessary. I mean, I guess from the outside looking in, it could have potentially been a 10-8, but the last like 40 seconds, he got off really good. You know, he was tagging with all those shots, but I was in no way, shape, or form close to getting stopped. It's funny. In the third round, I don't know if you guys heard Mike Beltran. I think I heard him say something about like, "Hey, protect yourself." And I'm against the cage, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and I smile and I wink, and he just laughs like, "You're fucking stupid." And then if you guys watch when the bell rings, he laughs and like just pats me on the back, like pretty much like, "You're a fucking idiot." But I guess you could give him a 10-8 round, but I didn't think I wasn't close at all.
And of course, people can go back on DAZN and see the fight. I'm now going to have to go back and look for that because I did not notice that.
You could barely see. So the camera view, you could see a little, you can't see my face, but the camera view, you could see he's like in the top corner. You could see like a little smirk on his face. It was funny. He was laughing. I just laughed. I forgot to talk to him about that after, too. I was too fucked up. That guy Pablo hurt me, man. He hurt me.
Oh, it was an awesome fight to watch. Just two guys constantly going at each other. It's your fifth straight win. So kind of what's next for you now?
Man, I got to sit for a little bit, man. I got a really big career opportunity that just came up. And I'm going to sit for a little bit. I'm not saying like I'm done, because I'm not done. I will fight again, but I will be out of commission until the end of the year for sure.
So what's that mean for in terms of just the day out of training? Is it just constantly going to be in the gym, or is that going to kind of slow things down?
Well, I have to go away for a couple months. I have to go do some work for a few months, but luckily they got a good gym up where I'm going, so I'll get some work in still. And I mean, I won't be fighter training, but I'll still be, you know, Muay Thai, kickboxing, boxing, and jiu-jitsu, and wrestling. I'll still be training, but fighting is going to take a seat just for a bit, though. I'm not walking away. I'm just going to settle some things outside of this fighting stuff first.
What's the difference between training for a fight as opposed to just training?
I guess the diet. The diet is tough. The diet is the biggest part. But you also, you know, when I'm not training for a fight, if it's one of those days where I'm like, I don't feel too good, or I'm tired, I'm not going in today, I could take those days. Yeah. Now, when you're in fight camp, you don't do that. You push through it and you battle through it. So I'll be taking those rest days.
I'm sure you're going to be sitting there still watching, you know, some of your teammates and fights you are looking forward to. Any fights on the horizon that you're just interested to watch just as a spectator?
Not really, man. Honestly, I was really, man, my boy Ben got screwed this weekend. I mean, Robbie got screwed more than Ben. Let me tell you the story. A few years ago, I went to one of those international fight weeks in Vegas, and there's so many big name guys there. And I wasn't starstruck by any of them. But when I seen Ben Askren, like, this was back when Johnny Hendricks was champ. Ben Askren started talking shit to Johnny Hendricks in the crowd. It was funny as hell. But I was so excited that he got to fight. I was really excited to see him fight, and that shit sucks that that it ended that way. But as far as upcoming fights, not nothing really I'm looking forward to.
Oh, I was just like you. I was really interested to finally see Ben Askren in the UFC. I think that while everyone's going to talk about how that fight ended, to me, it's right. About Ben surviving that flurry, surviving the slam and all that. To me, that's what impressed me the most about Ben, was being able to survive that, because he had never been put in that type of scenario.
And he got hit with some shots. To be honest, I wouldn't have been surprised if they stopped it when Robbie was sticking Ben. I mean, it would have been fair for them to stop that too, but I'm glad they didn't. Cause I just been a fan of him. Like, not only as a fighter, like, he's an intelligent person. You could tell by the way he speaks, and he's so fucking slick with his mind. And like, he's like he's not respectful, but like, he's proper. He's proper when he speaks and shit too. It's crazy. I'm a fan of his. I'm a fanboy of his.
It's very quick of how he sits there and spews off the way. Trash talk here, trash talk there. That's what's impressive about, and you can tell there. And I, when he was in Bellator, you would see it, guys. I'll never forget being in Oklahoma when he fought Carl Amasu, and that week everyone thought Amasu was going to beat him, and then he went in there and just ragdolled him. It was, when you see Askren up close, that's when you realize how good he is.
On top of that, we both got dad bods. What's up? He's holding it down for the dad bod. What's up, man? That guy is, you look at that guy, you wouldn't think he's an athlete. Look at him. Look at his hair is all crazy and his dad bod, but he is a phenomenal athlete. And I was so excited. My friends were, all my friends, they're all betting, making small little table bets with each other, and they're all pissed. And me and one of my other buddies, Smokey Jones, we're going crazy. Like, yeah, what's up? We're so happy for it, man. It sucks. That sucks for Robbie, though. It's very unfortunate. And Herb's a human being. He made a mistake, and you seen it in his face when Robbie's like, what the fuck? He's like, dude, like, fuck, dude, I thought you were out. Everybody thought he was out. You seen his hand, and then he jumps up. You're like, oh, shit, he wasn't out. But what are you going to do? What can you do?
Yeah, well, you see the one clip where his arm just goes limp, but then there's another clip where right before Herb stops it, you can see he's moving around like to show he's in it. So it just, but then what amazed me about Robbie was Like, I think for a lot of guys, you wouldn't blame them if they were just beside themselves. But after the fight's over, Robbie's like, hey, you know what? He's human. He makes a mistake. It happens. And I'm like,
right.
I mean, that's probably
good character.
But that's like probably, what, 5% of fighters who would probably handle it like that? Which I don't blame if a fighter would be all pissed off. But it's just, I think it says a lot about Robbie.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. It sucks that he got fucked. Mm-hmm. Him got fucked, like I was saying earlier, because that takes away from his win. But Robbie's really the person that got fucked in the whole situation. It's shitty.
It's awful, man. I guess we're going to see him run it back, so that should be kind of interesting. So we'll look forward to seeing when you do return, potentially at the end of 2019. Anthony, man, as always, man, I really appreciate time. Let me know where they can follow you out on social media, and, of course, those sponsors that have been helping out.
Man, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter that I barely use at Anthony Avila. The O is the zero. I want to give a shout-out to California Capital Bail Bonds here in Sacramento, Iron Monkey. Those guys are fantastic. Just got some new tattoos from them. Green Thumb Hydroponics here in Sac. They help you grow whatever you want, man. And Kydex Works, Outcasts and Underdogs. We're here, man. Thank you guys for everything, and look forward to competing for you guys again.
A couple weeks ago here on the program, we were joined by this man, Nate the Savage Smith. Of course, got that win back at Elite Fight League 3. Another victory submission win. First round. Not wasting any time. Nate, man, appreciate you coming back on the show, man. What's kind of, how do you sum up this fight from your point of view?
Honestly, it went exactly how I planned it to be. I went out there and, forced my will upon him. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't trying to give me an inch, but I was forcing it. Coming from, like, the tie clinch to the takedown to me cutting him open with some elbows. And, I mean, to, later on landing on the rear naked choke on him. I mean, you don't give me a window to finish you. It's just that simple.
When we talked, before this fight, you talked about the history that you and Bill had. Was it any different going in there knowing the history you had as opposed to other fights?
No, actually, because, at the end of the day, we can still be friends outside the cage. But during that time, it matter like it's business. And when it comes down to business, man, I'm not the one to play with. And I'm not finna allow like friendship to run through my mind, be like, oh, I'm hurting my friend. But at the end of the day, like, this person is here to, like, not only to stop me, but also run my record and my winning streak. I've been winning since my last few amateur bouts. I think I'm on like a 5 or 6 fight winning streak coming off from those. Coming into a professional, so, like, yeah, man, it wasn't no different.
And of course, obviously, another great win for you. And I know you were in Las Vegas this past weekend, supporting your teammate Anthony Smith, who obviously couldn't get the job done. When you see that, you see a teammate going through that where it's not clicking. And Anthony, I thought, was very open after the fight, just talking about, hey, I just didn't do what I told myself I needed to do. Is there anything you can take from that as a friend and a teammate of kind of making it realize something for your own career?
Yes. Cause again, like Anthony, I view Anthony not only as a teammate, but as a family member and as well, like a big brother. Because me and Anthony, we train together a lot out in Omaha, Nebraska. So, he taught me a lot. He's been showing me the ropes and what kind of got me to where I am. And it's the fight game, man. Things like that happens. And how Anthony, expressed it during after the post-fight press conference, I just had to end up making an ordeal and accept the simple fact that, stuff like that happens, man. Like, he didn't pull the trigger and he knows he didn't do it. And, there's it was nothing wrong with his cardio, so people can shut the hell up about that. But other than that, yeah, man, it is what it is on that matter. He went out there, he just did what he's supposed to do, but not fully, you know. So he acknowledges that, and that I can take forward. Make sure to do everything that you're supposed to do, you know, and don't just half, you know, just half do it, just fully do it.
Yeah, I heard him mention about, you know, the people questioning his cardio. Did I just miss something here where people are questioning his cardio?
Bro, there's been so many people asking about Anthony and his cardio. There was nothing wrong with that man's cardio whatsoever. It was nothing wrong with it. It just honestly was just in him wasn't pulling the trigger, because people constantly like tweeting, saying things like, oh, his cardio was, he was gassed out. He didn't want to fight anymore. He just wanted to curl up. First of all, if you never fought a day for your life, shut the hell up. Nobody wants to hear that. I don't want to hear that, let alone any. No, he doesn't want to hear that. And especially people who never worked out a day before their life. Like, come on, man. Like, you talking to a person who trains his ass off 24/7 for 9 weeks straight preparing for this fight, you know? Let alone we're in high altitude over here in Colorado. Like, we run, we lift, we do these hiking, you know, we go hiking, we do all this to extend our gas tank. So there was nothing wrong with his cardio.
I've been out to Colorado a couple of times, and, you know, and obviously there's a lot of, you know, a lot of great fighters out there. What's the difference training at that altitude as opposed to, it's like, say if you're at sea level?
Honestly, it's like when I first got out here, it took me a while to end up adjusting because the air is just a little bit more thinner. So now I have to force my body to adapt to this environment, let alone to, you know, get back to where I'm not feeling gas, because I can be moving very well and doing all these things, but in for that 5 minute streak. After that 5 minutes, and then now I'm starting to feel depleted. I'm gasping for air, you know, trying to slowly control my breathing. And that's the way how I did it, honestly, just control my breathing.
I mean, obviously, now you got this win. What's the plans now? I mean, is it just, you know, back in the gym, just grinding away, improving, and just kind of waiting for a fight offer?
Actually, we do have a fight offer. As soon as I got done dealing with Bill, I got sent a contract immediately, because that fight with Bill is like the number one contender for that promotion, and I ended up taking him out. So I highly doubt it. Anybody else, if you fight me on that one, is you're an idiot. But I'm going back in it this month, March 23rd in North Platte, Nebraska for MCF. It's going to be for the 125-pound title. So I'm getting ready for that. There's no injuries. I'm healthy. I'm good to go. I mean, I got no complaints. I'm ready to end up from 7-4-0 to 5-0. And then hopefully I would like to end up seeing Joby Sanchez. That's who I would like after this. That's exactly who I would like to after this.
We hear about the pros and cons of short notice fights. What do you think is the biggest pro of taking, you know, having two fights within a 30-day period?
Honestly, the pro is, like, not only you get another fight, you get another opportunity to showcase your skills, and as well, if you know that you not have any injuries, you came out with, like, literally no damage at all. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just you gotta be smart against the opponent itself, and that can be the negative part of it. It's a con. So if you end up taking another tough fight against another tough person when you just barely got past or got past a tough opponent, and you had some injuries out of that, and you know you did, and you try to take it, and you do, and you end up getting beat up at the end, like, that's your own doing, man. You shouldn't do that. So my message out to all the new pro fighters that's coming in, these amateurs coming in, turning as pros, be smart. Let your coaches do their deal. Let your coaches end up letting you know if you can do it or not. And Mark Montoya told me, he's like, we can get this shit done. And I said, okay, of course, I'm going to get this shit done. So I said, yes, let's do it.
Well, in terms of, I know you're very early on in the preparations for this one, but what do you like about the matchup?
Nothing, honestly. There's nothing I have never seen before. There's nothing that you know, would make me be like, oh, I should, you know, think about or worry about this and this. I don't think about that, man. I just worry about my damn self. I just constantly improve. I just constantly build. I just constantly grow. As many times as me and you talk, and as you see on my social media, I post and I say I'm steady growing. I'm steady learning. It's a fact. It's a truth. I'm in the room with a bunch of killers. I help out with a bunch of camps with a bunch of killers that are in my weight class, like world champions at that, especially my man Joe Warren. So I learn a lot and I adapt a lot. So it's very difficult for others to grasp that, to understand that I'm not your ordinary fighter, man. I'm not somebody, you know, that just on the upscale and then next thing you know, they go flatline off the map, you know. No, that's not happening with me, and I'm gonna make sure of that.
In terms of the Joby Sanchez fight that you would like to have, I mean, you know, is it something that, you know, you, your management, your coaches have kind of you know, been working on getting this one together, and how realistic do you think it is?
No, we actually haven't discussed this. I myself would like that fight, and I feel like it'd be a great matchup. We're both wrestlers. We're both, you know, grinded out. Very good at striking. Then, let alone, you know, even though he did get cut from the UFC, I honestly feel it would be a great step for me in my career to make that happen. And I just want to end up, you know, letting the UFC know, and Dana White and Sean Shelby, them guys, hey, my name's Nathaniel Smith. I go by Nate Smith, and I deserve a shot.
I know, because you tweeted on me on Saturday night, so I know you were watching Usman and Woodley. From a wrestling aspect, was there something that stuck out to you about the dominance of Kamaru Usman?
Man, just his nonstop pressure. He stuck with his game plan. His feints was selling it all. And then those takedowns, when as a wrestler, we are taught to constantly go forward, side to side, you know, snap a guy down and constantly chain wrestle. Doesn't matter what position we in, and just constantly wrestle. And even in a scramble, just realize where you are, understand the scramble situations. And Kamaru Usman, I mean, he dominated hands down all five rounds. Tyrone Woodley didn't even have an answer to the wrestling takedowns. And that's coming from, and he's a wrestler himself. And like I said, there's a bunch of guys that, like, in Division One, that's in Division One college, collegiate wrestling, that'd be national champions, you know, and they probably, you know, never won the state title. They're probably the guys they always get beat up on, so on and so forth. And Kamaru Usman, I mean, even though Tyrone Woodley wrestled for University of Missouri, and you know he was a All American over there as well, but at the end of the day, like, doesn't matter what your background is. Wrestlers don't care. We don't care. You can be the Olympic champ if you step that toe that line with me. I'm gonna take you out. So we keep that mentality, especially if we transition into fighting and mixed martial arts. So Kamaru Usman, I honestly applaud him on that one. Because not even many wrestlers that continuously take that many shots continue to end up staying active, continue to move their feet, continue to keep their hands active like that. And, you know, and it's funny because I end up seeing, like, the post-fight conversation between Kamaru and John Jones, and when they first met, which is up in Fort Dodge, Iowa, at my old college at Iowa Central. So that's where, you know, those two end up meeting up at. And, you know, it's... Go figure, man. You come over there, you go home around there, you meet nothing but champions. And at the end of the day, Kamaru, he dominated, man. And Tyrone didn't have no answer. He kept getting taken down. he didn't, and as a black belt, he didn't really do much underneath him. He didn't, you know, he didn't really respond. So, I mean, you know, hats off to Tyron Woodley for, you know, stepping in there and fighting and defending his belt. Nothing taken against him, nothing taken from him. But at the end of the day, Kamar dominated, and that man is a problem.
You know, the thing that stuck out to me, what Kamar said, and I know I think he said this in a press conference, and then he also said it on ESPN Plus. He said, I may not be the best wrestler. I may not be the best striker. I may not be the best jiu-jitsu guy, but I know how to mix it all together. And I thought that was just kind of a sum up of what MMA fighter has to be, is, you know, you don't have to be the best, but if you can mix it all together, man, and I just, that was an unbelievable performance. I don't think any of us saw that one coming.
No, and here's the thing about that, though, because I totally agree with that, because I'm with that statement 100%. I don't have to be the best at every goddamn thing, but what I will do is be the best at mixing it up, keep you guessing, keep you on your toes, because if you can't catch up, then I'm going to beat you. I'm going to outwork you. I'm going to do everything that, you know, you can't keep up with me. It's just like a game of chess. I'm gonna keep playing my hand right. I'm gonna end up keep going, and man, I'm gonna end up checkmating you sooner or later. And that's up, and it's up to you to figure it out. If you don't figure it out, it's gonna be checkmate. It can be checkmate in 3 moves. It can be checkmate in 10 moves. You never know. At the end of the day, I'm just gonna keep mixing it up. So Kamar is 100% right, man.
Yeah, it just amazing performance. I mean, I thought, you know, he had a great chance to win, but man, just the way he did it, just straight up domination. I mean, we'll see what's next for him. We'll see what's next. We know we got your fight coming up here. Of course, as always, Matt, I really do appreciate you coming on the show. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you out on the various social media channels, and of course, those sponsors that support you, man.
All right, thank you. Shout out to all my sponsors, Turp Pals. You got, you know, Onyx Sports. You end up having Iridium, Factory X, Russ Jones Law, Damage Control Mouth Guards, as well. You got Virus as well, and you know, Sky Optical and Design. And you guys can follow me on Twitter at Nate the Savage S1, letter S and the number 1. And then as well, you can follow me on Instagram, The Savage King 125. Make sure you guys keep up with me, keep up with the updates, because best believe I'm bringing in fireworks for sure.
And there was my conversations with Cody Stamann, Rafael Esparza, Anthony Avila, and Nate Smith. I appreciate all those men to give me some time to talk about their victories, and also with Rafael, talk about the odds with my bookie course. As he mentioned there, if you don't have an account in my bookie and you want to make a bet on this weekend's fights, he mentioned that little promo code that you can enter to where they'll give you a 50% you know, matching your deposit. So as he said, you know, if you put in $500, they'll give you $250. So great deal there if you're looking to make some bets here for UFC on ESPN Plus 4. But before we get there, that event and preview it, let's talk a little bit about two topics. First off, what was it, Thursday or Friday of last week, Mirko Krokop announces that he is retired. Apparently had a stroke after training, which just an absolute scary thing. And you know, and Mirko is going to be, you know, this is one of these retirements that you definitely feel like is legit, though.
It's too scary, man. I mean, I think when you hear about stuff like that, what you're most concerned about is what you haven't heard.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times these fighters, you know, especially international fighters, they really keep things private. Especially fighters in Japan, oh man, things are kept private for a while. So for Mirko, I mean, you just got to hope the best. But yeah, from a – look, this guy, it's kind of crazy what he's wanting now. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 fights in a row at age, I don't know, 44. Granted, most of the victories aren't necessarily top 15 heavyweights, but yeah, man. Oh, gosh, he's definitely retired. But by God, one of the best heavyweights of all time, an absolute legend. There are so many great moments in his history. I mean, the vast majority of them, obviously, you got to trace back to Pride. And if you just go and watch all of his Pride fights, it's worth it. And the good thing is a lot of them don't take that long to get to the end. to me, the coolest moment for Mirko Krokop in his career was, I don't know where the fight took place. I think it had, I don't think it was Croatia. Maybe it was Japan. I don't think it was Croatia. I'm sure where it was. And the fight itself was great against Fedor. But before the fight, they played just an amazing video of like Mirko Krokop going to his father's gravestone. It was an insanely just amazing, like, it was one of the all-time best MMA videos of all time. Plays the video, and then Mirko Krokop makes the entrance. And that in and of itself is epic enough, but the fight was great. So, yeah, when I think of Mirko Krokop, I think you look at him and Nogueira as the two challengers to Fedor, when Fedor kind of had that run as the best heavyweight in the world for a very long time. And not only that, when you think of Mirko, you think of an immensely popular person in Japan, one of the most important people in the framework of Pride, and absolutely one of the most exciting fighters we've seen, and the guy with the most dangerous leg kicks we've seen in the sport.
Yeah, man, I had a chance to be at his last fight, and that, you felt the popularity of Mirko, so that's going to be, for me, just personally, being there for his final fight and kind of how the crowd reacted to him. It's definitely, and look, his last loss was against Alexei Oleinik, who, is obviously one of the better heavyweights right now in the UFC. The other note I want to mention is, so Joe Rogan had his MMA podcast on, I want to say it was Monday, and he was joined by Brendan Schaub, and he noted that the reason Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone has not been booked is because the UFC wants it as a co-main event because they want to have pay-per-views headlined by title fights. Are you effing kidding me?
Jason, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard in my entire life. That is nuts. There is no champion. There is no champion in the UFC that can draw half of what Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone will draw.
Bingo.
There are some fights, maybe. Maybe Cormier versus Jones might draw half, a little over half. Are you effing – oh, my God. If that's true, which it probably is, but maybe it's not, because it's got to be insane to think that.
If it wasn't true, Daniel, the UFC would have already come out and shot it down.
How do people who have so much experience in promoting fights have such a stupid – rule that you have to that's not what promotion, that's not what fights are. People pay money on pay-per-view not for title belts but for fights, for contests, and the title belts don't mean jack because you've made so many interim title belts. It's insane how stupid that philosophy is.
Oh, I know. Next month we've got goddamn two interim title fights. Like to me, like, it's at the end of the day, Conor McGregor is a guy who can draw a million pay-per-view buys. And the next best case for a pay-per-view is probably a Jones-Cormier or Cormier-Lesnar or Jones-Lesnar that could probably maybe get around 500,000 buys. I mean, it's just, if that's truly true, that they want this as a co-main event, whoever idea of that in the UFC is, and if they're not the owners, should be fired. Because that is promotional malpractice. If I'm Conor McGregor, I'm going, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm the biggest star you got. There is no one close. And you want me to be a co-main event where you want a title fight that is going to have pay-per-view points, that is going to get pay-per-view points because of me, not them.
Conor McGregor could draw a million buy rates fighting my Uncle Joe. Yeah. If it's him and my Uncle Joe with a shovel and a button down shirt in the fight promo pic, and it's an open weight contest because he's put on some weight, that's drawing a million. Cerrone versus McGregor with the fight promotion, I think it could do 2 million. It's dumb. It's dumb. It's insane because again, the titles don't mean the titles only mean a lot when you respect them, when there's only one championship per division, and the simple fact of anything, because there was a back in the day when the champions meant something, you could go to a casual main event and you could ask them to list off the champions in each weight class. That cannot be done anymore.
Interim titles don't mean crap. Look, and like I was having this discussion with somebody on social media last week. Like, it's like Holloway Poirier is a great fight. It's a great fight. But why do we have to put an interim title on it? Because we have seen interim title does not equal title unification bout in your next fight. It's I mean, Tony Ferguson can attest to this. Colby Covington can attest to this. There's many examples of this. And it's just like the UFC is such in love with giving titles out. Like, just because a title is on the line doesn't mean I'm buying a pay-per-view. I'm buying a pay-per-view because I like the fight card. I bought UFC 235 on UFC.tv, and it was a great viewing experience. It only really buffered once, which was during the co-main event. Other than that, the stream quality was great. But it's just like, when I heard that on Tuesday, I was like, are you kidding me? This is what the UFC thinks? Like, the UFC does a lot of great things, and they have raised this industry to another level. But man, that is unbelievable to me.
Yep, that thought process has got to be taken out because it's stupid.
Yeah, of course, we do have a UFC card this weekend. UFC on ESPN Plus 4, a.k.a. UFC Wichita. As I mentioned, your prelims are going to start early on at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Main card, 8 p.m. Eastern time. I'll tell you, in terms of the pay-per-view lineup, the fight card lineup.
God, I hope it's not a pay-per-view. Yeah. Is that a Derek Lewis Jr. Dos Santos interim heavyweight title fight?
I mean, look, I think overall it's a nice fight night card. Yeah. I was surprised that Anthony Martin and Sergio Moraes is on the prelims. You know, that was kind of that's a nice, welterweight matchup. In terms of the rest of the prelims, you got Zach Otto against Alex Morono, of course. So we had Zach on the podcast last week. Matt Schnell versus Lewis Smolka, which, by the way, that will be at 135 pounds. Those are kind of some of the matchups that stick out to me on the prelims. The main card, we got Grant Dawson making his UFC debut after his issue with USADA. He's taking on Julian Arosa. You actually head over to MMAreport.com. You can check out my interview with Julian Arosa. You got the return of Ben Rothwell taking on Blagoy Ivanov. Nico Price, Tim Means, someone's getting knocked out in that matchup most likely. Co-main event, someone's getting knocked out most likely in that matchup. Izilia Dos Santos against Curtis Milner, and of course Derek Lewis versus JDS in the co-main event. I mean, like, to me, the fight that interests me the most, I don't know if there's a clear fight I would say that interests me the most. There's fights that I'm interested to watch. I don't know if there's one that sticks out above everything else.
Personally, I actually think the Dos Santos-Milner fight is my fight to watch here. I think it's the best fight on the card. I mean, both these guys have looked phenomenal in the welterweight division. This is a great matchup. I think this contest is going to be exciting and the talent level's high. I think it's a 1-2 between this and the main event between Lewis and Dos Santos. I mean, Lewis Dos Santos should be exciting. And again, Dos Santos is a big name. And Lewis obviously has made a name for himself over time. So, I mean, those are two good fights. But in terms of which one I want to see right now, personally, Jason, I think Dos Santos-Milner is the one I want to see. And it's like, talk about a welterweight division. Obviously, these guys aren't a part of the very top of the food chain. But this is a huge step up for whoever wins as they continue to climb. And then you could tie me into Tim Means and Nico Price just because I think that's exciting. Is it fair to say Martin Moraes is my under-the-radar fight because on the prelims? Because it definitely feels like the fourth most important fight on this one, even though it's like the main event at the prelims. But Sergio Moraes really looked great, and I just think that fight's an awesome one.
Yeah, I think, in terms of under the radar, I mean, I think Dos Santos Milner, you can almost say, is under the radar, because I think
that's true.
When it comes to this fight card, everything is about Lewis and Dos Santos. And, I mean, look, we don't know what to expect out of Derek Lewis. I mean, that that's the thing with this one. And JDS kind of, can he have this, career resurrection, where he's at now? I mean, it was, I remember watching, I don't know if it was the ESPN prelims or the pay-per-view when they were talking about this fight card. And they put up the graphic of the top 10. And you sit there and say, man, we're 2019. And when you look at the start of the Fox era of the UFC, JDS and Kane were, you know, 1-2, and now they're 7-8. It just kind of shows kind of how the division has changed. But I'm probably more comfortable picking JDS in the fight against Derek Lewis just because, man, is Derek Lewis going to be a guy that's just very passive and he's waiting for the fifth round to make something happen?
The thing about JDS is, you know, I think he's going to pick apart Derek Lewis in the body parts that really hurt, the stomach, the legs, with the kicks and the body punches. That's my big concern for Derek Lewis. Obviously, Derek Lewis, the thing about him is, you know, he has flash knockout power, and you know he can get beat down over time, and he's so dangerous no matter what. So that's a big concern, but I'm definitely picking Junior Dos Santos in this fight just because I think skill-wise, when you look at the matchup, I think more likely than not, he ends up the winner than Derek Lewis.
Yeah. You know, Means, Nico Price, I like Tim Means in that one just because I just think he's I think Nico's going to try to make it a brawl, but, man, that's a great welterweight matchup. Dos Santos, Milliner, gut says Milliner on that one. Brain says Dos Santos. Even off Rothwell, I don't know what to expect out of Ben Rothwell.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think Ivanov is my pick in that contest, Jason. I mean, that fight is something I'm somewhat interested in, but it'll either be pretty exciting early on or really, really boring. I think there's no bones about it. I think Means definitely, he knows how to win these firefights. I think he'll win. Milliner also, this guy's got so much potential, but again, that welterweight contest is real close.
Hell, I mean, you mentioned about the Bosch Akhmedov fight. I mean, why do I sit there and say that could be a little sleeper fight of the night pick?
I mean, when Omari Akhmedov entered his UFC career, it was a barn burner. Dude's kind of crazy. And we know Tim Bosch is kind of crazy. So I think this is the type of fight, maybe it starts slow. One dude hits the other dude spits on the ground, and then it's haymakers. So I could totally see that one being a sleeper fight of the night, or the actual fight of the night.
The crazy part about this fight card is pretty much all your favorites are 2-1 or less. When looking at your biggest favorite, which is JDS at -220. That's your biggest favorite on the fight card.
That's shocking to me.
Tim Means is -210. Beneil Dariush -200. Of course, all these odds are as of Wednesday morning. Jeff Hughes -210. There is no – everyone else is, you know, -190 190 and below.
I don't think I've ever seen a card like this where the biggest favorite is -220. If you feel confident about some of these fights
– No. Look, yeah, I've started doing my DFS prep for this show, for my show on Thursday, and I was like, man, there is not like a guy I really look at and say, I'm truly confident that they're going to get a quick stoppage and score a ton of points in DFS.
I think Tim Means is the one guy I like in that regard.
Tim Means was a guy I looked at. The top salaries in DFS this week, JDS, 9,400, Jeff Hughes, 9,300, Anthony Martin, 9,200, Alex Morono, 9,100. Beneil Dariush, 9,000.
Yeah, I think. You're right. Jeff Hughes.
Literally, me and Pete Rogers were going back and forth on this. Like, of those five, who's most likely to get a first round finish?
I think Jeff Hughes, actually. But, man, I don't know. Like, you can't feel confident about it.
It's heavyweight MMA, man. That's. And I've come to this assumption: I'm never picking someone in DFS in the first fight of the night because I always get it wrong.
That's such a random. I don't know if you should hold on to that, Jason.
I had Paula Viana last week. I was so I thought she was going to just go wreck Hannah Cyphers. Thought she was going to wreck her, and then that doesn't happen. Like after it was over, I told Pete to go. Yeah, I am never taking the first fight of the night ever again. I don't care who it is. Not doing it because I have the worst luck in DFS on picking the first fight.
Well, I can't look. I'm not gonna, it's your game, man. I ain't gonna say it, but yeah.
You know what? Anthony Martin is kind of interesting to me. I think he has. I don't know if it comes in the first round. I can maybe see the second round. I mean, this is my overall feeling of Saturday's UFC. I think we're going to see a lot of stoppages. I just think the way these fights are set up, it's in a newer market for the UFC. I think they have set this card up where we're going to have a lot of finishes throughout this card.
Well, I absolutely hope so, because if we do, I think one of the main talking points will be, once again, man, that ESPN pace is real great, because there's a lot of finishes. We're going to get a lot of fights in a short period of time.
Well, hey, it's on ESPN. The entire card's on ESPN Plus. So, yeah. Which makes it real. I mean, look, you could, hell, since it's an 8 p.m. Eastern time main card start, this fight card may be over by 10 or 10:30.
You can go get out and go to Chuck E. Cheese after. Drink some pizza. Cheese. Eat some pizza and drink some beer, you know.
Ooh. Do they have beer at Chuck E. Cheese?
Yeah, man, apparently. They do? Yeah. I think that's why there's a lot of like Chuck E. Cheese fights, appearance.
There's a lot of people who would call Chuck E. Cheese hell.
I heard there's a conspiracy theory going out there that they take the pieces of Chuck E. Cheese, like uneaten pieces, and they stick it back together. They put like little cheese in between the slices and melt it.
God, I hope that's. I actually had some good pizza yesterday, so tried out a new spot here and by my house, and it was really good, really good. It was like a Italian tapas place, and So it had like a wide range of food. And so, like me and my wife, and we ordered a bunch of stuff. We had a pizza. We had some mussels, calamari, some eggplant. I mean, it was a really good pizza.
Damn, man, I had a salad. I had a salad yesterday. And you're out here eating like your Mario, you're probably gonna throw out Mario, like your Guy Fieri, man, with your own Food Network show.
It was expensive. It was expensive, it was good food. Yeah, that's always my thing. Is like, I don't, if it's expensive food, I don't mind as long as it's a good portion, and the food's good. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes these fine dining restaurants.
Oh yeah, they give you like they give you like yeah nothing.
Portion size isn't always the. I remember there was one time I went to a fine dining place, and like literally we left, and she looks at me, she goes, "I'm still hungry."
Go to McDonald's.
I go. How about we go to a little ice cream shop and we get some ice cream? But yeah, no. Fine dining doesn't always mean biggest portions. Yeah. So, But I'll be watching on Saturday. I got nothing going on. I think I might go to a spring training game during the day, and then at night. I think actually we're going to the Philadelphia Phillies game on Saturday for the Bryce Harper debut.
Wow. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, it's
that's going to be the first of many games that they will enjoy, and then a lot of games they won't enjoy as he plays out that 13-year contract.
Yeah, the Rays, their spring training is like 2 hours away, so I'm not driving 2 hours.
Yeah. Just,
and the Phillies spring training facility is unbelievable. It's a great stadium. I actually go, they're a minor league team. They have a good minor league team, so yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to put on baseball every day.
But I'm looking forward to these fights. Don't expect that at JDS and Lewis. It's just one of these fights. I have no idea of what to expect. But Dos Santos, Millender, Price, Means, I think are going to deliver, and I have a feeling that those are going to be the two fights that ultimately, when these fights are over, those are the fights we're going to be talking about.
I think so too, and I think it'll be a fun little show next week. And I think a lot of evenly contested. On the rise,
and of course, next week's show we are going to preview UFC on ESPN+5. Of course, this will be the card that's going to be taking place in London, headlined by Darren Till and Jorge Masvidal. So look for that on next week's podcast. Also, just kind of looking ahead of that card, Joe Duffy, Mark Dykes is on that fight card. Ian Heinisch, who of course we had on the podcast last week, he's taking on Tom Breed. So if you missed any of those conversations, you can go to themmareport.com to check out those interviews. Do want to thank Cody Stamen, Rafael Esparza, Anthony Avila, and Nate Smith, all coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, as always, we appreciate everyone that checks out the podcast each and every week. And really, if you enjoy what you're listening to, really, we would appreciate you give us a rating and review on the podcast app that you are listening to the MMA Report podcast. So let's go wrap up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
this week's episode of Crush Performance, as promised, I go over the incredible numbers from the 2018 MLB season to show us just how baseball is changing right before our eyes. And we ask the question, is the NFL Combine the toughest player evaluation in all of sport? And we also look at player health and injury prevention. It's a top priority in all of sport. We talk to Dr. Teo Versteeg of TopSpin 360, the recipients of the NFL's 2019 First and Future Safety Innovation Award, about this incredible piece of equipment and how it's helping us keep players safe. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.